Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 77. Firsts, the world and haiku of Chiyoni. Spelled Chiyoni, and because the show will cover so much of her life in this intro, simply going to read some of her haiku. The blowing wind, split by winter trees. But for their voices, the herons would disappear this morning's snow. One must bend in the floating world, snow on the bamboo. All our words by writing brush, snowbound. Becoming flowers, becoming water drops, this morning's snow. This is your host, Monk. Thanks for listening.
Chiyoni, Woman Haiku Master by Patricia Donegan and Yoshi Ishibashi, published in 1998 by Tuttle. They do a lot of Asian books, and this is a hard book to find. I think like used copies are even like $35-45. I don't know why it's so rare. Anyway, I always like to include her as one of the haiku masters, as the other four get mentioned. Matsuo Basho, Yosa Buson, Kobayashi Issa, and Masaoka Shiki. But this sometimes comes from the male-dominated angle, as they say in the preface to the book. R.H. Blythe, who put together the four-volume haiku, really major, like Kerouac read that and started writing haiku, so it's in high regard, and yet, this is what they say. One comment about R.H. Blythe: even though I feel indebted to him and he remains one of the most respected translators of haiku, his derogatory comments about female haiku poets in history of haiku, quote, "it is doubtful whether women can write haiku, and haiku poetesses are only fifth class," end quote, surely contributed to their neglect and limited translation over the years. So, be that as it may, bit about this book on our translation, she writes, "This is They write, "This is the first book of English translations devoted to a woman haiku master, and this is the first time that Chioni's entire biography, literary criticism of her work, examples of her renku, linked verse, haibun, and approximately 200 of her haiku have been translated into English. Nearly three-fourths of the haiku have never been translated before. Only about 50 of her haiku out of a canon of 1,700 have been previously translated into English by others over the years." And she has a famous haiku, one of the most well-known ones. "Morning glory, the well bucket entangled, I ask for water." A lot of times I read this in haiku classes and people have a hard time kind of connecting what it means. I'll read it again, see if you can guess. "Morning glory, the well bucket entangled, I ask for water." Now, this is coming from the super compassionate Buddhist place of she does not want to disrupt the morning glory vines by dragging up the well bucket. So instead, she will go ask for water elsewhere. And this is a great example, importance of translation in the classic tradition of haiku anthology by Fabian Bowers. He gives three translations of this, and you can hear the major difference. Here's one. "All round the rope a morning glory clings. How can I break its beauty's dainty spell? I beg for water from a neighbor's well. And the well ladle is claimed by the morning glories that twine it, so I beg water elsewhere." Or, more haiku-like, "Morning glory, the well bucket entangled, I ask for water." Basho and Chioni, when thinking of famous haiku poets, these two names have always been in the forefront. Among the men, there is Basho. Among the women, there is Chioni, Japan's most famous woman haiku poet, also known as Chiojo, Kaga no Chio, and Mato no Chio, Chio of the Mato area. Exemplifies the best of the women poets of the Edo period, 1603 to 1867. She is most widely known for her morning glory haiku, familiar to most Japanese. Her life is full of legend, yet two things are certain. She lived the way of haikai, appreciating each moment, creating art as part of everyday life because she was open to her world. And she achieved fame during her lifetime through her intense devotion to her art in an age when women's freedom and creativity were restricted. Now, the dates for her, she lived 1703 to 1775. Chioni was born into a flourishing haiku world. There were many haijin or haiku poets living in her area who had contact with Basho. She was born 9 years after Basho had passed away, but his influence was still strongly felt, and many of his disciples still preach the way of haikai. And when Chioni was 12, her father recognized her talent, sent her to Han Sui, a haiku master, to work as his servant for a few years. This was a common practice of the merchant class. He wanted not only to encourage her poetic talent, but also to have her learn Chinese characters and the writing of poetry. Useful talents for the family's scroll-mounting business. Tons of fascinating information in here. I'm just kind of flipping through to get to the sections, get a feel, overview for her and her life. It is unclear whether Chioni ever married. In her day, a woman was expected to marry. If she didn't marry, some of the reports of her married life were probably meant to explain some of her haiku, which show experience with romance. And she is reported to have had a husband and son who passed away. There's no proof that she married or had a child. However, her two well-known haiku about a child are said to be wrongly attributed to her. "Dragonfly hunter, how far has he gone today?" Meaning that her son had, gone on, and so she was lamenting that. And in her midlife, a succession of tragedies occurred while she was in her 30s, when members of her family died, including her parents, brother, and his wife, leaving her alone to carry on the family's scroll-making business. In 1748, when Baiji of Ise visited and Chioni composed haiku with 20 other haijin, she signed her name as Mato Scrollmaker Chio. Yet from 1733 to 43, she couldn't write as many haiku as before because of these misfortunes and her heavy work schedule. She didn't fully devote herself to haiku again until she was almost 50, when she adopted her niece, Nao's husband, Rokubei, or Haku'u, to take over the scroll-making business, which was customary at the time. And Chioni, the knee part, represents her nun, being a nun. In 1754, at age 52, Chioni became a Jodo Shinshu, Pure Land Buddhist nun, and added the suffix ni to her name thereafter was known as Chioni, Chio the Nun. Her ordination came rather late in life. Other women poets who became nuns, such as Kikusha, did so around age 30. By then, Chioni was ready to move to a new stage of peace and non-attachment after many years of struggle. In traditional Japanese arts from the 12th century on, there were ways or paths thought to lead to enlightenment. Among them are Sado, the way of tea, Kayudo, the way of archery, Shodo, the way of calligraphy, and Kado, the way of poetry, referring to Tanka Waka poetry. Like Basho, who espoused haiku as a way of life or life's path, Haikai no Michi, and who also wrote his best haiku in his later years after meditating in a Zen temple for 10 years, Chioni's best haiku were written in her later years after becoming a nun and devoting her life to Buddhism and haiku. Yet, Chioni did not live permanently in a temple as conventional nuns did, but continued to live in her home, enjoying the freedom and respect that the status of a nun gave her, and the rare privilege as a single woman to travel and meet other poets, especially male poets, for it was usually forbidden for women to associate with male outsiders. As an artist and a nun, Chioni was outside the class system and therefore not restricted by the normal social codes imposed upon women, whose activities were usually confined to their homes and governed by male family members. According to three obediences, when young, obey your father, when married, obey your husband, and when widowed and old, your son. In Chioni's case, her only obedience was to follow the path of Buddhism and haiku. A little bit more here. Even after she became a nun, Chioni remained exceptionally active. She wrote haiku with prostitutes, socialized with male and female poets, created collaborative art with samurai, wrote haiku as gifts for foreign envoys, published 2 poetry books, traveled and wrote haiku on the road, and celebrated everyday life outside the temple. So she's a fascinating character and, quite the sort of, I don't know if you'd call her a feminist or ahead of her time, but thinking of her now and also with prayers now, when I think of sort of the idealism that I get from haiku, I also have to put that in perspective nowadays, and with prayers for Japan and all that they are dealing with, and the nuclear issues at Fukushima, and so keep that in mind, and hopefully some of the haiku sentiment will help them get through that stuff. And Chioni as artist. Traditionally in East Asia, the 3 perfections of calligraphy, painting, and poetry were considered one art, and Chioni excelled in all. For the Japanese, the visual, spatial effect of calligraphy is almost as important as the meaning. Haiku is usually calligraphed in 1 vertical line, but sometimes for visual effect in 2 or 3 lines, as Chioni did in some of her paintings. So that's interesting. I had heard of the Chinese, the 2 sisters, calligraphy and art, because you use the brush to both paint and do calligraphy. But here in East Asia, the 3 perfections, calligraphy, painting, and poetry. In women poets of the Edo period, there is a strong tradition of female poets in Japan, dating from the Heian period, 784 to 1185, when Murasaki Shigubu wrote The Tale of Genji, the world's first novel, and women began to dominate tanka court poetry, which became the accepted form for women writers. However, late in the 17th century, when haiku took hold, it was thought to be a mostly male form since it was seen as more objective, less emotionally direct than the earlier tanka form, and thus, quote, unsuitable for women. And there was the suppression of women's rights during the Edo period, which added to the difficulty of becoming a writer. So really, we think about writers nowadays, I mean, different cultures, maybe there's some repression, but generally, many cultures are for writing, and a lot with the Native American indigenous peoples, it's a real outlet and amazing therapy. And she had lots of women poet friends, there's a section devoted to that, and she often wrote with them, the linked verse. Yeah, this part I love about haiku is that it's a section called Haiku as Greeting. Haiku are usually not categorized in Japan. The most common function of haiku has always been, as with all the other Japanese, I'm pronouncing, who knows, aisatsu, or greeting, a way to open oneself and connect with another person or thing in nature. It is very social, a simple recording of an appreciated moment, usually between 2 people, as in this haiku Chio Ni wrote for a visiting friend. Just for now, I spread the morning snow over the dust. Just for now, I spread the morning snow over the dust. And one for a departing friend. If only I could tie the string of my kite to the hem of your kimono. If only I could tie the string of my kite to the hem of your kimono. Usually these haiku as greetings were given to the visiting person as a gift, and sometimes the person replied with a greeting haiku as well. The understanding of haiku as a social activity is important because it takes haiku out of the realm of mystery into its natural realm of the everyday. I think that's perhaps what attracted Kerouac and some of the other beats to the haiku. Was it wasn't so fancy schmancy. It's a very with earth and concrete poetry type of way to convey everyday experiences. And another thing about Chioni's poetry haiku is that she gives, you know, images and moments that of female experiences, whether it's with the kimono or the, you know, bathing or skincare or something like that. So those are it's kind of a rarity in the amount of haiku that I've read. And a little bit more history here, and then we'll get to the firsts, a series of firsts of haiku for the new year. This section's called Poetry, Politics, and the Basho Revival. Before his death in 1694, Basho transformed haiku into a poetic form of depth and sophistication. After his passing, the form tended to revert to its older character as either trite or amusing wordplay, except for gifted poets like Chioni. Following Basho's death, his school fragmented into factions. After his disciples died, it got worse. Donald Keene notes, "Yet even in the worst period of haikai, a few poets preserved something of the tradition of Basho. The rustic schools of Mino and Issei, rather than the poets of Edo, eventually paved the way for a revival of haikai poetry. Kagano Chiojo deserves special mention among the rustic poets." So another example of the fact that, you know, how these threads of lineages and carrying on a tradition can sometimes really hang in the balance on a few people, whether it's, you know, the female tradition or even here the more serious, quote-unquote, in-depth way of haiku that Basho helped put on the map. And one more, kind of a mystical section here, the healing power of haiku. In Japan, there are many beliefs in the power of poetry, Chionese included. Words are believed to have spirit or power, as in the word kototama, koto, word, tama, spirit, for the language of the gods and goddesses. And originally, as in most cultures, Japanese poetry in ancient times were religious or spiritual incantations. As noted previously, tanka poetry, the precursor to haiku, evolved from shaman chants, believed to have the power to move the gods and demons. In the Edo period, and even today, haiku poets have maintained that haiku has unusual healing powers, and helps to prolong life. Now that was Robert Haas mentions that, his theory that in his book, on some haiku, that you know, he sees the haiku as these shamanic sort of prayers or blessings, you know, not just, oh, look at the nice cherry blossoms, but before spring, you know, praying for the healthy blooming of the cherry blossoms and such like. There are several stories about the powers invested in Chioni's haiku. According to one, the governor of Kaga had heard about Chioni's fame and once asked her to write haiku as a gift for some Korean envoys. Later, when he needed her to revive his garden's most beautiful cherry tree, which was ailing, he invited her to the palace. And we'll start with the new year. This is a little section. A lot of the haiku are arranged by season, but this is a short section called The New Year, and it starts with this one. Flying of cranes as high as the clouds, first sunrise. Flying of cranes as high as the clouds, first sunrise. Next one. One mountain after another, unveiled, the first mists. One mountain after another, unveiled, the first mists. And a note about her style here in the book. In her day, it was said that Chioni's style was true to Basho's. Although Chioni acquired her own unique voice eventually, she was surely influenced in her earlier period by the prevalence of Basho's teachings in the Kaga region. Ranko, author of the afterword to Chioni Kushi, wrote that Kihaku, the editor, had originally decided to collect Chioni's haiku because she was true to Basho's shofu, or style. Basho's style of haiku was formulated by others over the years. His well-known fundamentals usually include sabi, detached loneliness, wabi, poverty of spirit, hosomi, slenderness, sparseness, shiori, tenderness, sokyo, spontaneity, makoto, sincerity, fuga, elegance, karumi, simplicity, Kayakan Bayosho, objectivity, and Shizen to Hitotsu Ninaru, oneness with nature. So many people, the herons disappear. Fields of seven herbs. And the note here, among the traditional New Year's activities of Japanese families is going out on January 7th for the picking of seven herbs to make seven herb porridge, a food thought to bring good health in the new year. So many people, the herons disappear. Fields of seven herbs. Under New Year's sky, holding Mount Fuji's smile. Mount Fuji represents her adopted grandson wearing a hakama, traditional robe, for the ceremony for five-year-old boys. Because Chiyoni had been sick with asthma for some years, she especially cherished this joyful moment. She passed in autumn of that year, under New Year's sky, holding Mount Fuji's smile. And a little bit more celebratory here, New Year's sake, until the next, this first delight. New Year's sake, until the next, this first delight. First dream, even after awakening, the flower's heart the same. And the note, in Japan there is the custom of attaching importance to the first things done in the new year, like the first dream. The Japanese saying, it is auspicious to dream first of Mount Fuji, second of a hawk, and third of an eggplant. First dream, even after awakening, the flower's heart the same. And another first, which is in the winter section of the book. First winter rain, the bamboo somewhere in the dawn. First winter rain, the bamboo somewhere in the dawn. And the note, a haiku which expresses the aesthetic appreciation of hearing the distant or imagined sound of rain on the bamboo. And probably said this one before on the show, but one of my favorites of sort of a Zen quality and also of a indigenous people's perspective transforms the perception. Clear water, no front, no back. Clear water, no front, no back. So that's a little intro to the amazing and interesting world of Chiyoni, and touching on haiku poetry in Japan and how it's carried on to today. There's find more of her poems online, and there may be some other books. It takes a little looking. First time I got this book was I got it through a library, like a library transfer thing where. Turned out they got it from like an upstate local library, got it from an upstate library in New York. And it was interesting because it was some sort of like a Christian, it was like, you know, Jesus Christ Church School Library or someplace that, and here was this book on loan. So that was interesting. And then eventually, got a copy as a present. So I'm quite grateful to have this book, and, I hope you enjoyed listening, got a flavor of the haiku, and, you know, especially to the women poets out there, you can touch on things that are, you know, not often mentioned in haiku as far as the traditional way to different experiences, whatever it is. As with any poetry or comedy, you know, you can make jokes about anything, flossing, bathing. So in a way, the haiku fits that mode as well. So thanks for listening, and hope the first days of your year are off to a good start, and continue to have a good one. And we'll go out with a track from a CD played, I think, one of these songs a while ago. It's a quirky CD, so quirky I rarely play it, called Patterns of Plants by Mamoru Fujiida, and it says in the notes, I composed patterns of plants based on the data taken from plants. The data is taken by Plantron, which is an interface that botanist Yuji Dogani devised for researching living organisms through the observation of the relationships between plants and the environment. Through two electrodes put on the leaves of plants, one can observe slight changes of the surface electric potential, which a computer analyzes and converts to digital data of music called MIDI. I extracted a variety of melodic patterns from the data using Max, a programming language for music.
A composition of patterns in plants was made possible by the use of melodic patterns based on the data of plants. In the composition, I made an attempt to use alternative tuning systems when I applied the framework of just intonation, Pythagorean tuning, or a well temperament to the melodic patterns based on the data of plants. The patterns got delicate shades of colors. It could be said that a variety of melodic patterns you hear in the series of patterns of plants are traces of moments when the data of plants, the framework of a specific tuning system, and my sensitivity coincided one another. Each of the pieces in the series of patterns of plants consists of four short movements called patterns and applied and has applied a different tuning system.